Good evening, brothers and sisters. I thought I'd stay here. I've only got a couple of slides, and I don't wonder what I could have slides about on this subject. But I must admit, a bit perplexed when I got this subject. I thought, well, I don't know much about it. And there isn't a massive amount written about the tribe of Dan in the scriptures, but there are a few questions and a few, hopefully, answers that we can look at tonight. So what happened to the tribe of Dan? And a couple of questions that have arisen. If you look at the scriptures, the big question is, why were they left out of the 12 tribes that are mentioned in the 144,000 of Revelation? History seems to reveal some fascinating facts about this powerful tribe and their migration from Israel, and perhaps their future and where they dwell on earth today. That's a fair bit of speculation, but we'll touch on that at the end. As we know, brothers and sisters, one of the sons of Jacob was Dan, and his name means judge. He was the son of Rachel's handmaid Bilhah. He became the ancestor of one of the 12 tribes of Israel. And when Jacob was growing old, he prophesied of Dan. Dan will provide justice for his people as one of the tribes of Israel. Dan will be a serpent by the roadside, a viper along the path that bites the horse's heels, so that its rider tumbles backward. I look for your deliverance, O Lord. I should have said that quotation was from Genesis 49, verse 16, and those blessings that Jacob gave upon his sons. The King James Version reads to that last verse, I have waited for thy salvation, O Lord. And we'll look at that a bit later. A serpent, when it slithers and crawls, leaves a trail or a track in the sand. And even so, the tribe of Dan, we find their signs or waymarks showing where they had journeyed. We've read of one tonight. We'll have a look in a minute. For some reason, as this prophecy states, Dan must wait for God's salvation. Perhaps even longer than the other tribes. But we'll come back to that, as I said. In Exodus 1, we read that along with all the tribes of Israel, Dan's descendants multiplied greatly during the sojourn of the Israelites in Egypt. And then, if we turn over to Numbers chapter 1, the first thing we ought to look at. We read about the Israelites being numbered when Moses led them out of Egypt. And we read in there, in chapter 1 of Numbers, verses 38 and 39, that those that came from Dan numbered 62,700. That's men, old enough to make war, 20 years old and upward. And if we look, glance through all the other numbers there, we'll find that Dan outnumbered all the other tribes quite considerably, except for Judah, which had a number of 74,600. So Dan was one of the largest of the tribes of Israel. In Deuteronomy 33, verse 22, Moses gave his final blessings to the children of Israel. And he said of Dan, and of Dan he said, Dan is a lion's whelp, he shall leap from Bashan. So, Dan would be a vigorous, warlike tribe of warriors, I think we can gain from that. He wasn't going to sit about solitarily and be content. He was going to be like a lion. He would leap forth and journey forth as he left. And Jacob in Genesis 49 verse 9 described Judah in that same way. Judah is a lion's whelp. From the prey, my son, you have gone up. And examples of the fulfillment of Jacob's words can be seen in the history of the tribe of Judah, particularly in the wars of David. Similarly, in Numbers 23, verse 24, Balaam likens the nation of Israel to a lion in his second prophecy. Look, a people rises like a lioness and lifts itself up like a lion. It shall not lie down until it devours the prey and drinks the blood of the slain. So that prophecy may have had its initial fulfillments in the conquest of Canaan. And Dan, with Dan's part of it. But this was a specific prophecy to Dan. So why does both Jacob and Moses use this figure of a lion's whelp? Other Hebrew words are used for older and stronger lions. The Hebrew word ger, translated whelp in the AV or cub in other translations, generally indicates a young lion that has not left its mother. You can turn over to Ezekiel 19 and read that. Perhaps the idea of divine care and protection is intended by the use of this description. The prophet Micah also speaks of a young lion in chapter 5 and verse 8. He says, "The remnant of Jacob shall be among the Gentiles, in the midst of many peoples, like a lion among the beasts of the forest, like a young lion among the flocks of sheep, who if he passes through, both treads down and tears in pieces, and none can deliver." It seems that the analogy of a lion suggests military activity. And this is confirmed by those two passages quoted earlier about Judah and Israel, spoken of by Balaam. Well, despite this prophecy, he shall leap from Bashan, the tribe of Dan was never connected with the land of Bashan. They were, I can't see that very well, but, sorry, it isn't a very brilliant map, but they were allotted a small piece of lands just to the south of Ephraim and west of Benjamin. But we read, I quote from the NIV, in Joshua 19 and verse 47, we read that the Danites had difficulty taking possession of their territory, so they went up and attacked Leshem, also called Lesh. We read that account earlier. They took it, it says, and put it to sword and occupied it. And they settled in Leshem and named it Dan, after their forefather. So, these maps aren't exactly the same. But, so we have Dan down here, to the west of Ephraim and Benjamin, and this area up here being what the Danites went and conquered. Not exactly sure of the borders there, because this was outside of the area that they were originally allotted. This quotation that we just read from Joshua seems to be perhaps a later addition to the book, as the actual event is recorded in the book of Judges in chapter 18. And chapter 18 of Judges, it is suggested by scholars that it's suggested by scholars that chapters 17 to 21, that period of the judges actually took place during the time of Joshua. There seems to be no real explanation of this juxtaposition, so I'm not going to try and justify it. It seems to be thought like that. Even Christadelphian writers seem to think that, but no real justification for it. And this was the first indication that Dan intended to leave their name behind as an identifying sign. But we'll find more of that in a minute. It was actually the half-tribe of Manasseh which was in this area, that actually occupied the land of Bashan. So it was seen that Bashan is mentioned here only because it was an area where lions were commonly found. Apparently the region of eastern Bashan has many caves which in earlier times were used by lions for their lairs. One commentary says about that area of Israel: in the region of eastern Bashan, which abound with caves, and more especially in the woody slopes of Jebel Horon, many lions were harboured, which rushed forth from the thickets and were very dangerous enemies to the herds of Bashan. I think that was a traveller back in the early 1800s. Leaping forth suggests activity with agility and suddenness. And I found an article in the Testimony written by Brother Green. He says, those commentators who look for a past fulfillment in the history of the Danites refer to the surprise attack on Laish, or Leshem, as we read in the second Leshem we read in Joshua, the commentators look for that past fulfillment on what we've just read. However, since that episode is connected with idolatry, we question whether it could be a fulfillment of this blessing bestowed by God. But others do suggest that Dan, in his northern territory, couched like a lion of Bashan on the slopes of Mount Hermon, watching for his prey and ready to leap forth. No doubt the greater and complete fulfillment is yet in the future, and will not take place until the tribe of Dan, together with all the tribes of Israel, will be turned back to their God in truth and righteousness. Then the people of Dan will, with those of the rest of Israel, be part of that army which, led by Jesus, will subdue the enemies of Israel. The conquests of Israel, led by Joshua and David afterwards, in the past, are but a prefiguring of that day to come, when, as the psalmist writes in Psalm 110, verse 3, your troops will be willing on your day of battle. And he goes on, he will crush kings on the day of his wrath. He will judge nations, heaping up the dead and crushing the rulers of the earth. In the context of the blessing for Dan, it should be noted that the Hebrew word translated judge in that quotation we've just read about Christ in verse 6 is the word from which the name Dan is derived. The connection is obviously then clearly made with Jacob's blessing: Dan shall judge his people as one of the tribes of Israel. In the book of Judges, we learn another trait of this tribe. This time we can turn over to Judges 5. To the song of Deborah and Balaam. The song asks in verse 17 of chapter 5, why did Dan remain in ships? Which one translation says, or Dan abode in ships. It appears that the tribe of Dan became a mighty seafaring tribe which loved to sail the seas. We'll look at that in a little while. But let's go on now to that chapter 18 that we looked at. read earlier. I'm indebted to Brother Harry Whittaker's study on Judges for some thoughts here. We note in Judges 1, verse 34, that the tribe of Dan, although the second largest of the tribes at the time of entering of the land, had not proved strong enough for the task of both winning and holding its inheritance from the indigenous races. It says in Judges 1, verse 34, and the Amorite forced the children of Dan into the mountain, for they would not suffer them to come down to the valley. And the reference here to Amorites is odd, because we would have expected it to be the word Philistines. Can it have been a time between the time of Joshua and Samson that the Philistines first migrated to Canaan from their original homeland, which was in Crete? On the other hand, it may have been Philistine pressure on the west pushing the Amorites over, which caused them to expand eastwards at the expense of the tribe of Dan. Or whatever the explanation, it became a matter of urgent necessity that the portion of the Danite inheritance already occupied be speedily enlarged. And instead of asking counsel of the Lord, instead of perhaps rallying their brethren of the other tribes of Israel to their aid, instead of strengthening themselves in the unfailing promises that have been made to their fathers, yes, instead of going against both the Amorite and the Philistine in faith that God will give them the territory assigned to them by Joshua, instead of all those good alternatives, the men of Dan coveted another inheritance in a region where the divine lot had not fallen to them, and which was, indeed, outside, completely outside the borders of the promised land, as it had been measured off by Joshua. And there they planned to blot out a peaceful, unsuspecting people, rather than turn their weapons against those that God had told them to destroy on their own doorstep. Well, as we read, they firstly sent out some spies, five in all, to find new land for settlement. In the course of their journey, these men came to the house of Micah, where they recognized the young Levite from Bethlehem. They knew or recognized his voice, it says in verse 3. Perhaps they had been forced even to retreat from the Amorites as far as Bethlehem, where they met him. Well, the men used this opportunity of meeting this man to ask counsel, you could say somewhat belatedly, of the Lord. Yes, that is human nature, isn't it? To decide on the course to be followed, and then, as an afterthought, when fully committed to it, to ask for God's blessing upon it. It's a lesson for us, brothers and sisters, so we need to think about that. The Levite was, of course, unable to give them any genuine communication from the Lord. God had already revealed his will through Moses, through Joshua, in the allotment of the land. But they weren't satisfied with it, were they? They wanted to hear an oracle. Inquiry of the Lord was only to be had, though, through the high priest, as we know. Nevertheless, this young Levite was willing to tell them what they wanted to hear. Verse 6, reading from the New King James Version. Go in peace. The presence of the Lord will be with you on your way. This, in fact, was just wishing them well. It would apply perfectly to any circumstance they might befall them. But the men of Dan, with the naivety of so many who would inquire of God in the wrong way, read into the words an assurance that their project would prosper. Their mission would have God's blessing. And they went off, highly satisfied. In due time, they came to the extreme border of the land, at the very edge of the Northern Territory, assigned to Nephilim. One commentary writes, exploring there the fertile, remote valleys of the east of what now is known as Galilee Panhandle, to the west is the southern part of Mount Lebanon, to the east and north are the Hermon Mountains. Melting snow from the Hermon Mountains provides the majority of the water of the Jordan River and passes through Dan, then known as Lesh, making the immediate area highly fertile, highly covetable, as they had obviously found. The lush vegetation that results makes the area around Dan seem somewhat out of place in the otherwise arid region around it. According to the book of Judges, prior to the tribe of Dan occupying the land, the town was known as Lesh, and allied with the Sidonians. This might indicate that the inhabitants were Phoenicians. Sidonians actually were Phoenicians from the city of Sidon, who may or may not have been Canaanite. The alliance had little practical benefit, though, due to the remoteness of their town from that city of Sidon and the intervening Lebanon Mountains. The town was also isolated from the Assyrians and Aram by the Hermon Mountains. The Septuagint mentions that the town was unable to have an alliance with the Arameans. The Masoretic text does not mention the Arameans, but instead states that the town had no relationship to any man. Scholars believe that that actually is a textual error, a typographic error. And it should have been the word, Hebrew word Adam, man. Being a mistake for the word translated Assyrians, Aramaeans. The description of that quiet life of these people, as given in the Authorized Version, is difficult to make sense of. The NIV translates that verse 7. They saw that the people were living in safety, like the Sidonians, unsuspecting and secure. And since their land lacked nothing, they were prosperous. Also, they lived a long way from the Sidonians and had no relationship with anyone else. So in the eyes of these spies from Dan, this was a very important factor. They hastened back home to report to their brothers in the tribe. And their enthusiastic, urgent story reads as though they wanted to immediately turn around and make an onslaught on this unsuspecting city and its surroundings. It's maybe that it was their first intention to make a deliberate move to rejoin Naphtali. Dan and Naphtali were both sons of Bilhah, and the two tribes shared the same encampment in the wilderness, and were both in the rear guard of the Israelites when they were on their march. The returned spies reinforced their own favourable impression with Jonathan's oracular utterance, or rather, their interpretation of it. When they returned, in verse 8 it says, when they returned to Zorah and Eshtol, their brothers asked them, how did you find things? They answered, come on, let's attack them. We have seen that the land is very good. Aren't you going to do something? Don't hesitate to go there and take it over. Yes, and their call to action was immediately taken up. A body of 600 well-equipped men set out. On their way, they set up camp in a place called Kiriath Jearim, which they named Mahanan Dan, the first record of their leaving their ancestral name in a place, something to make a note of. And then they came to Milcah's house again, and notice what happens. The 600, in verse 16, the 600 Danites, armed for battle, stood at the entrance of the gate. The five men who spied out the land went inside and took the carved image, the ephod, the other household gods, and the cast idol, while the priest and the 600 armed men stood at the entrance to the gates. And when the men went into Milcah's house and took the carved image, the ephod, and the other household gods, and the cast idol, the priest said to them, "Well, what are you doing?" And they answered him, "Be quiet. Don't say a word. Come with us and be our father and priest. Isn't it better that you serve a tribe and clan in Israel as a priest rather than just one man's household?" Then the priest was glad. Jonathan felt bound to remonstrate, didn't he? But there was little he could do about it. And when his own self-interest was coolly expounded to him, he speedily threw all scruples to the wind. Forgetting his commitment to the one who had hired him, to Micah, and quite oblivious of the moral principles associated with the service of Jehovah, to whom he claimed to minister. He readily threw his lot in with these 600 marauders. Now we find that they had left with their families as well. It was only expected that there would be a pursuit by Micah. So the woman and children were put in front, out of harm's way. But Jonathan, immediately assuming the authority due to his new office, insisted on the observance of the religious proprieties and arranged for the holy equipment to be carried in the midst of the people. That is, in the centre of the long caravan. Just as the furniture of the tabernacle had travelled through the wilderness journey. Well, Micah rallied with his neighbours and made immediate pursuit and soon came up with the slow-moving house. At first, the men of Dan feigned innocence and surprise. "What's the matter with you that you called out your men to fight?" they said. And he made a bitter and reproachful reply. "You took the gods I made." See how the man confesses here his own folly in making gods apart from the God of Israel. "What else do I have? How can you ask what's the matter with you?" Why did he not insist that these men had earlier accepted his hospitality and therefore they should now maintain that covenant of peace they had by returning his property? No, as it was, the men of Dan speedily recognised here was no formidable enemy. They knew that they could bluff their way out of this situation without difficulty. And the children of Dan said to him, in a sense, "Do not let your voice be heard amongst us, lest angry men fall upon you and you lose your life with the lives of your household." In other words, these men here are pretty desperate. You'd be wise to cut your losses, or worse things might befall you. And that's just what he did. For he loved his life more than his religion. Now if the words of Moses, "Dan is a lion's whelp, he shall leap from Bashan," did apply to this time, it may be inferred from that that they moved from Ephraim and crossed the Jordan and travelled north around the east side of Galilee. Their target, Laish, the town, means a lion. And so it may be that this course of action to seek out this remote place in the north was led by knowledge of this prophecy. The onslaught took place according to plan. The people, quiet and secure, were smitten with the edge of the sword. and their city burned with fire. And there was no deliverer, because it was far from Sinai. This burning of the city was a strangely illogical thing, for to save it intact would surely have furthered their plans considerably. Maybe it was a conscious imitation of the burning of Jericho, as God had told them to do. More likely, they contented themselves with firing a few houses to help terrorize the inhabitants, and it got out of control. But with the city rebuilt and the area fully settled, Jonathan, the son of Gershom, the son of Moses, now came into his own as priest for the tribe of Dan. Verse 30. He and his sons were priests for the tribe of Dan until the time of the captivity of the land. And this statement about their priesthood is usually taken to mean that this Danite sanctuary continued right up until the time of the Assyrian or Babylonian captivities. And to this is often added the inference that therefore the book of Judges must have been written after that date, and probably after the Babylonian captivity. But if we look at Judges 18, it actually suggests a different captivity than the Assyrian or Babylonian ones, doesn't it? It says, and they set up Micah's graven image, which he made, all the time the house of God was in Shiloh. That is, until the time of Samuel. And this time indication is precisely what would be expected. For it's difficult to imagine that Samuel, with his sense of duty, would have tolerated, even in remote Dan, the existence of an apostate priesthood. The first succession from truly religious loyalty left its mark. In the days of Rehoboam, when the upstart Jeroboam was seeking to wean the northern tribes from service to the house of David, he revived Dan and Bethel. He revived in Dan and Bethel the ancient worship of the golden calf. Dan was hardly a good centre to choose because of its remoteness. The actual city of Dan right at the top there. But Dan already had a reputation as a place of worship. And the memory of the sanctuary there still lingered on. It's interesting to observe that whereas at Bethel, he made priests of the lowest of the people, which were not sons of Levi, the same is not written concerning Dan, for Dan already had its own tradition of priests descended from Moses. And so it could be seen that the destiny of the northern kingdom is to be dated from the day that Jonathan, the restless Levite, joined forces with the men of Dan. And from that time also, there began to be fulfilled the prophecy, Dan shall be a serpent by the way, an adder in the path. In Dan, apostasy was first fully organized. Probably for this reason, the name of Dan has been omitted from the roll of tribes, from the tribes of Israel in both Chronicles and from the catalogue of the spiritual Israel, who were sealed in their foreheads as the servants of God, as Revelation 21 verse 27 says, without are idolaters, and whosoever loveth and maketh a lie. Yes, Dan appears maybe to be excluded because of this idolatry. Over the centuries, they became steeped in idolatry and image worship. So much so that maybe they will be slow to repent of their sins and to come out of the prevalent end time idolatry. And so will fulfill Jacob's prophecy, I have waited for thy salvation, O Lord. And finally, just a few moments, we'll just look at what historians tell us about these ancient Danites. Some of these cameos seem a bit dubious, but I think they're probably worth a mention. The tribal emblem of the Danites was a snake with a serpent in its claws. Interestingly, Josephus records a letter written by the Lacedonian Greeks to the Jews, in which they express their kinship to the Jews. Their seal, that of the tribe of Dan, was affixed to the epistle. An eagle with a dragon, serpent in its claws. The reply of the Jewish high priest to the letter from the southern Greeks, the Spartan Greeks, declared that a previous letter between the two people had established the relationship from sacred writings. So there does seem to be some connection that the Jews seem to acknowledge between the Greeks and the people of southern Greece. About 1500 BC, a last flowering of the megalithic culture occurred. That's basically people who erected those very large stones, Stonehenge. On the island of Sardinia, in the Mediterranean Sea, a tower-building people, sometimes called the Sardana, emerged and soon dominated Sardinia, and then invaded Corsica and the Balearics, and ruled them for about 1,000 years. And it's believed that these people had their origins as Danites. Their very name appears to identify them. They gave their name, apparently, to the island Sardinia, and their very name, Sardana, proves who they really were, according to those who believe in this. In Hebrew, the term Sharon means a level plain, and it comes from the root word yeshar, meaning to make straight or even, right, pleasant, prosperous. The Sardana were, it is claimed, the prosperous Danites, the tribe of Dan. The term Sar, or Shar, in Hebrew, means chief, prince, ruler, from which we have the word Tsar, or Caesar, or Kaiser. The Sardana, then, were the chief, or princes, of Dan, so it's claimed. The northern Danites dwelt near, as we said, the cities of Tyre and Sidon, the home ports of the Phoenicians. Dan, as we read, who abode in ships, intermarried with those cities, and it appears established colonies throughout the Mediterranean region. In the downfall of the northern kingdom of Israel, the inland portion of the tribe of Dan was definitely carried into captivity with the other tribes, led by Ephraim. But when the Assyrian Empire fell in the 7th century BC, it appears that they migrated through the Caucasus passes. And this was known as the land of the Sarmatians. Careful not to say it as the Samaritans, but it obviously derives its name from there. These people called themselves Skolotai, but the Greeks called them Scythians. The prophet Jeremiah wrote, "Is not Ephraim my dear son, the child in whom I delight? Though I often speak against him, I still remember him. Therefore my heart yearns for him, declares the Lord. Set up road signs, put up guideposts, take note of the highway, the road that you take." And it seems that as the Israelites migrated through Europe, the ones that had been taken captive into Assyria, they fulfilled the prophecy and left road signs and guideposts along the way so that they can trace their routes. And the chief tribe to do that appears to be Dan. Because of the many number of times, they seem to leave their name of their ancestor Dan everywhere they went. You might not just have thought about that, but since the Hebrew has no vowels, the name Dan is written with just the two letters D-N, or its Hebrew equivalent. Thus, words like Dan, Din, Dong, Dan, Den, and Dien correspond to the name of Dan in the European languages. The tribe of Dan is said to have passed through what is known as Macedonia. Don being the name Dan, and the Dardanelles to the north by the river Danube in the territory of Sarmatia were located the rivers of Dien, I don't know how you pronounce that, but, and Dien Ister and the river Don. Many other places are claimed to be named after Dan, but perhaps the one that is perhaps the most obvious is the Danes in Denmark, or Dan's Mark, as it actually it means. And similarly, if you look through Irish place names, many of these contain the word Dan, or Don, or Din, such as Dan Sower, or Dan Dog, or Dan Drum, Donegal Way, Donegal City, and Dundon Derry, as well as Dingle, many other Danes. There is also an interesting area of association with other symbols or emblems of Dan. We have mentioned the serpent, but the two most important symbols was a white horse. The white horse seen here in the symbol of, and it's not very good, I can't see it very well here, I don't know whether it's better here, but the white horse here is seen as the national symbol of Denmark, and it appears on this coat of arms of Denmark. Both of these symbols were also prominent in the American history. In fact, the actual serpent symbol vied with the eagle to become adopted as the national symbol of America, and it's present, and they're present on many of the US Army's flags. Now, the final teaser I would like to leave with you is taken from Jeremiah. Sorry, I should have mentioned the other ones that are up there. The symbol was on a Viking ship, and this is really an interesting little quotation that I found on the internet. What is compelling is how this serpent motif would manifest itself over and over again in artwork and design, often associated with the Vikings, whom some claimed ancestry from a mythical father, Zan, Odin. And that was put on the internet by Dr. Richard Griffiths. I don't think it was that, which is... and then finally, you can see the picture here, not very good, but the symbol there, and that is on a door in Jerusalem. So the final teaser I'd leave with you is taken from Jeremiah. And Jeremiah says, sorry, I'm getting to have written a quotation down. The snorting of the enemy's horses is heard from Dan. Chapter 8, verse 17, remember? It's heard from Dan. At the neighing of their stallions, the whole land trembles. They have come to devour the land and everything in it. The city and all who live there. See, I will send venomous snakes among you, vipers that cannot be charmed, and they will bite you, declares the Lord. Irenaeus, I don't know how you pronounce it, one of the early church fathers writing in AD 180, relates the coming of Antichrist to the tribe of Dan. He declares, and Jeremiah does not merely point out his sudden coming, but he even indicates the tribe from which he shall come. We've just read. Well, we assume this to be the physical area of Dan, or even the city of Dan, which, as we noted, is right in the north. That's where we expect the aggressor to come into Israel. However, this writer and others since believe that this force against Christ will actually arise from the tribe or the people of Dan. And this too, they believe, is the reason they put forward that this tribe is not reckoned in the apocalypse along with those which are sent. And finally, another Jewish tradition is that a pseudo-messiah will arise from Dan. And many Adventist Christians in America, see America, is actually representing Dan, and from there will arise a false Messiah. Well, there's some fruit for them.